Go to roguefolk.bc.ca. So I'm going to leave you here with Katie for the next next hour, half an hour, for Arts Express. And I'll see you guys all next week.
I'm a wizard, and I'm using my magic powers to go to the Engineers Without Borders benefit concert. It's February 7th at the Backstage Lounge on Granville Island. All my wizard friends are going to be there.
Four bands are rocking out for a good cause. The Perks, the Hotel Lobbyists, Punch Charming, and Hemingway's Gun. Doors at 8, advance tickets available from EWB. Contact them at ubc.ewb.ca.
If you're not at the Engineers Without Borders benefit concert, you don't have any magic powers at all.
Hey, we're J plus J plus J, and I bet you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
The sitar.
We call it that. Do you?
You should. Unless you don't like sitars.
Hello and welcome to Arts Express. I'm your host, Katie Fitzpatrick. Now we have an exciting show for you today. We're going to be talking, first of all, about the UBC V-Day events, which are coming up. And in that context, V-Day stands for both Valentine, Victory, and Vagina. And it's all about helping fight violence against women. We're also going to be talking a little bit later on with Carolyn Debbie, who's part of a project called In Bulk in the Belly, which is a dance installation project that's going on in the city. We're also going to be checking in with Sabrina Jalise. You may know her from Much Music's video On Trial, who's doing a comedy thing with Deborah DiGiovanni, I believe it is, this Thursday night here in Vancouver. And finally, we're going to be doing a review of the new movie There Will Be Blood, which I had a chance to check out last night. I've been thinking about a lot, and really great film, and I'm going to be talking a lot more about that later. Of course, we're also going to be doing a little bit of listings for you, and we're going to be playing a little bit of music. Now, as I mentioned, the first thing I want to talk about here was this UBC V-Day event, which is coming up. Now, this is how they describe it on their website. V-Day is a global movement to stop violence against women and girls. V-Day is a catalyst that promotes creative events to increase awareness, raise money, and revitalize the spirit of existing anti-violence organizations. V-Day generates broader attention for the fight to stop violence against women and girls, including rape, battery, incest, female genital mutilation, and sexual slavery. Now, they've been doing a lot of work all across the country at all kinds of different colleges and universities, including, of course, UBC. And one of the main staples of this program that they do, the UBC V-Day, is all across the country when they do these V-Days, they show Eve Ensler's The Vagina Monologues. And I know auditions opened for those last term, and now they've got their performances all pegged down, and those are happening at at UBC, I believe, February 7th to 9th. And they have other events as well going on. One is the Vagoprov. UBC Improv, which is a big vagina-loving club on campus, they say, has banded its women together to put up the first all-female improv show featuring the beautifully talented Rosa Parks. They'll laugh and raise money for All the Ladies, which I believe refers to the various charities that the UBC V-Day is working for. Now, that is Wednesday, February 6th at 7 p.m. in Scarf Building 100. The cost is only $2. And another thing that UBC V-Day has been doing, as you may have noticed, is they've been putting posters up around with sort of vagina facts, which I guess the idea is to, give us a little more information about women's health, but also to teach us that the word vagina is not a bad word and that we can say it even on the radio like I'm doing right now. And the other big effect of V-Day that I was reading about is that it's helped them to build in-depth networks to end violence against women and girls in Egypt, Sudan, Morocco, Tunisia, Algeria, Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon. And I know that work in women's issues in some of these foreign countries is sometimes a little bit of a touchy subject between sort of the global feminist camp and the cultural relativist camp, with some saying that, you know, we don't really understand necessarily what certain cultures are doing, and maybe the way that they treat their women, it only seems bad from our perspective, etc. And of course, I believe as well that we have to take it with a grain of salt considering our own culture, because when we look at people in the Middle East, we might say, well, they have to, you know, cover their bodies, that's oppression. But first of all, they may be doing that of their own choice, and second of all, I would say that having to expose our bodies, having a large social pressure to do that in Canada is also oppression, so we have to take that with a grain of salt. However, what seems good about this V-Day group is that they're specifically geared towards stopping violence against women, so they're not dealing necessarily with social practices in these other nations. They're just ending violence, which I don't think is something anyone could disagree with. So if you want to support this event, you're going to want to go to this improv night, which is on tomorrow night, and you're going to want to go check out the Vagina Monologues February 7th to 9th, and that's happening on campus. Let me just check where it is. It's at the School of Music Recital Hall, and it starts at 7 p.m., and you can buy tickets at the Sub. I believe they're selling them they're selling them right now all the way up to Friday, and they should be down in the Sub from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., so you should be able to find them. Now, since we're talking about women today, I thought I'd play something new from Cat Power off her new album, the 2008 album Jukebox. This one's actually written by Hank Williams, performed by Cat Power. It's called Ramblin' Woman, and we're going to go to that one right now, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Sabrina Jalise, who, as I mentioned, is from Much Music's Video on Trial, and she's going to be letting us know about her comedy event coming up later this week.
Thank you.
All right, so that was Cat Power off the new album Jukebox, that one's called Ramblin' Woman, written by Hank Williams, performed by Cat Power. That's the second track off that album. Now, unfortunately, I had a little bit of trouble getting hold of Sabrina Jalice, as I promised you would happen here on Arts Express, so that's all right. But don't worry, just keep your ears tuned for her show that's happening on Thursday night, and you'll be fine. Now, I'm going to let you guys know about some other events that are going on right now. One of them is called Spirit of a Masterpiece. It's kicking off the Cultural Olympiad, which the Van Out Committee is organizing. They're doing a cultural event every year until the Olympics, at the time when the Olympics would be, so to foster the arts, I guess, make Vancouver look great as we head into the Olympics. So one of the events that's happening with that is a myth-rooted piece of music giving voice to a sensational sculpture by Bill Reed. That's called Spirit of a Masterpiece. Some other events that are going on right now, My Name is Rachel Corey, taken from the writings of Rachel Corey, edited by Alan Rickman and Catherine Viner. That's directed by Sarah Garten-Stanley with collaborating director Marcus Youssef. It's playing right now at the Havana Theater, and it will be there until February 9th. A few other events going on right now. There's still The Black Rider. I interviewed Michael Scholar Jr. from that production a few weeks ago, and then I actually heard him on Nardwar's show again, talking more about the Tom Waits music angle with Nardwar. Now, The Black Rider is a great show. It's playing as part of the Push Festival, which actually wrapped up a few days ago, but it's continuing on until February 9th. It's showing at the Arts Club Granville Island stage on Johnson, and if you don't know about that piece, it's an expressionist musical created by Tom Waits, William S. Burroughs, and Robert Wilson. Another theater event on at the moment is Banana Boys. Leanne Orias' play based on Terry Wu's novel about five regular Asian-Canadian guys in their mid-20s struggling with issues of identity and self-worth. That also goes till February 9th at the Firehall Arts Center on East Cordova. Theater event going on right now is Jane Eyre. United Players presents Polly Teal's adaptation of Charlotte Bronte's gothic romance novel directed by Tom Kerr. You can find more information about that at www.unitedplayers.com. That's going till February 17th at the Jericho Arts Center, a place that you actually want to keep your eye on because they often have some great productions over there. Now, before we start talking about There Will Be Blood review, we're going to be playing an interview that I did over the phone earlier with Carolyn Debbie, who's also doing something as part of the Cultural Olympiad. It's called In Bulk, In the Belly, and here's my interview with her. Well, do you want to tell us a little bit about the project that you're working on?
Yeah, we've been working very hard since the beginning of January to create a piece which is involves an audience having to travel through the downtown area. The actual performance takes place in a variety of locations. They're all interior spaces, So it's a bit of a magical mystery tour for the audience.
Great. And now I know that you've done a similar project in other cities. Is that true?
Yes.
And so how has Vancouver itself changed the work in this for this one?
Well, I mean, we work very much site-specifically, meaning that mm-hmm. the actual spaces that we perform in, we create the work in as well, so that the individual characteristics of the spaces themselves and the characteristics of the city itself influence, you know, what we decide to do in those spaces. So it's
right.
It's very particular to this place, and I mean, certainly there are some universal things as well. So mm-hmm. you know, it's a mixture.
Okay, and I know that it talked about in the summary there. It was saying how it's about how urban environments affect relationships and people. And do you want to comment a little bit about on how you see that happening?
Yeah, I mean, specifically in this case, I've been interested for quite some time in how people who live in cities feel or don't feel themselves to be part of the natural world.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, a city allows us to build our own artificial environment that separates us a little bit from the natural rhythms of creation of
right.
the earth. And so in particular, this piece, which is called Imulk, is about the seasons on one level. Mm. So we're talking about the fact that this is the middle of the winter. It's midpoint between the winter solstice and the spring equinox.
Right.
And the name Imulk actually comes from an Irish pagan festival, which marks that midpoint between those two parts of the winter. And it's because that particular point in the winter is about the time where we start feeling like, God, isn't it going to end? You know, we're really sick of this weather.
Mm-hmm.
But in the literal translation of Imulk is in the belly, which is referring to the fact that the animals were actually pregnant now. And so that's one of the signs that these pagan Celts in Ireland would use to say, yes, actually, spring is coming. You probably know about Groundhog Day. Groundhog mm-hmm. Day just passed us last Saturday. That's also a tradition that comes from the Imulk festival.
Oh, wow.
So this idea of looking for the animals to see if they're coming out of the holes, you know, coming out of their dens, is also another way that people would look for spring. So because we're looking at, okay, we're in a city, we're not so aware of those kinds of things, but the piece is trying to reflect back again, you know, so how much do we pay attention to the turning of the seasons when we live in a city. There's another cycle of life that we're also quite interested in this piece, which is simply the journey that we make from birth to death.
Mm-hmm.
We're also considering that as well. Perhaps you could call it the seasons of a human life as well. We have performers in the piece that range from 10 years old to 85 years old. So we're trying to reflect that in the actual cast of the work as well.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the relationship with the urban environment in part is that these changes in life and the seasons are happening, but us in our sort of constructed artificial world, it kind of takes us a little out of touch with it and changes the cycles themselves.
That's right. And so the piece journeys between different interior spaces in the city, and it's almost like we take a peek into, well, what actually happens in the belly of the city? You know, what are these different locations, and how emblematic are they of the different things that happen?
What are some of those locations that you've chosen?
Well, we're keeping all of that very secret.
Okay, fair enough.
But we want it to be part of the thing that's interesting, is just to this kind of voyage of discovery that you will take as an audience member.
Right, exactly. Now, how do people tend to respond to the voyage as a performance?
It's very interesting because I'm usually in the audience every night, so I get to surreptitiously overhear everyone's comments, and if people do seem to be quite engaged. They're quite excitedly trying to figure out what's next and what the significance was of the last place they were at. So
right.
It seems that they're getting it.
Now, this production seems like it has a huge scope. It's dealing with death to new life, land to sea, darkness to light, seasons, the urban life, etc. How do you cope with so much meaning and to put it into specific performances?
Well,
tough question.
It's been a pretty intense piece to make. I have to say, also a very short period for us to do that. But we've got a great cast and a great crew, so it's really coming together. Another influence that we've had is that I had been reading earlier this year a book by David Suzuki called Sacred Balance: Rediscovering Our Place in Nature.
I'm reading that one upcoming for one of my philosophy classes.
Yeah,
so there you go.
Really interesting book, and David is very kindly let us have permission to use some of the text from that book. So it's been, not only are we thinking, it's not just about a pagan festival, we're also thinking about ideas from science, philosophy, and just sort of everyday life in Vancouver. So it's quite a rich mixture of ideas.
Absolutely. Now, I read that you were also a visual artist and an actor and singer before you became a choreographer.
Yeah.
So you've had a wide range of artistic expression, I suppose.
Yeah.
So how do those other fields inform your work as a choreographer?
I think it's interesting because I didn't get involved with dance until I was in my late 20s. And when I discovered, I'd watched contemporary dance, but when I actually got involved in it and started training at Simon Fraser University, I felt like I'd come home, because it's a world where all of those different artistic languages can contribute to the final product. So it's not just about movement, it's also about image and sound, it's about music and installation. So I felt that it's a place where I can use all of those other ways of expressing ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly every piece has involved, you know, more than just movement, more than just dance movement.
Right. Now, I was noticing that this is part of the Cultural Olympiad, right, that they're organizing. Now, I've been going online and trying to find out more about this Cultural Olympiad, and it seems like it's been a bit of a mystery. I don't know if you can shed some light on a little bit more about the organization of that, if you know where the contact information is and why, how you became a part of it and things like that.
They do have a website.
Yeah, okay.
which is, you've caught me off guard. I don't have it in front of me.
Oh, that's all right. No problems. I'm sure people can Google it and figure it out.
VANOC. And I think there's been quite a bit of press recently.
Right.
There's a whole range of different arts events that are taking place under the umbrella of that festival.
Right.
And I think the intention is that every year, starting this year until 2010, there's going to be a cultural Olympiad celebrating excellence in the arts during the same dates that they're going to have the Winter Olympics in 2010.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. So we, like many other arts groups, applied with an idea for a project. There's not an overt link with this in our project with the Olympics, save mm-hmm. that I felt that it's interesting parallel the idea of the Olympic flame, because Imolc, mm-hmm. This pagan festival, fire is a very important symbol of the new life of spring. Mm. And so a lot of the celebration during the Imolc festival would involve lighting fires. The people in that culture would extinguish all the hearth fires in the homes and then relight them with a sacred flame. So there's certain parallels, of course, with the Olympic flame, which is, you know, meant to symbolize the spirit of the Olympics being carried through from year to year and also from country to country. So we made that point to the Vanok selecting committee, and I think they felt that was an interesting angle.
Right, the idea of the movement and the cycle of change with that happening as well, I guess. Is...
Yeah, and that flames being a symbol of that.
Right.
So fire is also a very important part, thing that you'll see in our piece,
right.
A recurring theme.
Right. And so do you want to just give the details of when your event is happening and how to get tickets and all that stuff like that?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so it's being co-presented by the Dance Center and the Vancouver 2010 Cultural Olympiad. It's at 8 p.m. from Tuesday to Saturday and running until the 16th of February.
Okay.
Yeah. And the tickets are available through Tickets Tonight, which is 604-231-7535.
Okay, great. And where do people gather to go start this magical mystery journey?
Yeah, the box office is at the Roundhouse Community Center, which
right.
is in Yale Town.
Right, okay, I remember that now, yeah.
And it's possible to buy tickets on the door from
okay,
1 hour
great.
Before the show as well. So
and then people go from there.
Yeah, and
okay.
it goes ahead rain or shine, so come prepared for whatever weather we're having.
Umbrella if you need it and all that stuff.
Yeah, we do have some umbrellas that we can give people if they don't have one.
Perfect, yeah, the weather's terrible right now, so
yeah, I know.
It might be necessary. Okay, well, thank you so much for talking with us today. I really appreciate it.
Great, thanks a lot.
Thanks very much. All right, so that was my interview with Carol and Debbie. Once again, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Arts Express here on CITR 101.9. I'm Katie Fitzpatrick. Now, as promised, I'm going to do a review of the new film that's getting tons of buzz, There Will Be Blood. It's a critically acclaimed 2007 film inspired by Upton Sinclair's novel Oil, which was written in 1927. It stars Daniel Day-Lewis and Paul Dano and was written, produced, and directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. The film received significant critical praise and numerous award nominations and wins. The National Society of Film Critics, the Los Angeles Film Critics Association, and the Austin Film Critics Association recognized There Will Be Blood with awards for Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Actor. Daniel Day-Lewis received many awards, including a Golden Globe for his performance, and has been nominated for numerous Academy Awards and BAFTA Awards, including Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor, and Best Adapted Screenplay. The movie follows Daniel Plainview, a ruthless oil man, and his relationships with his son and with a preacher named Eli Sunday. The film opens with a scene taking place in 1898. We see Daniel fall to the bottom of a mine. He wakes up with a broken leg, but before looking for help, he grabs some of the bits of gold and silver rocks he's found. He then drags himself along a desert trail for hours and finally arrives to sell his gold. He lays on the floor with a broken leg while his gold is counted, smiling to himself. This is an opening scene that tells us more about Daniel's character than we likely realize at first. He is a tough, strong man, but his weakness is his ruthless ambition and capitalist instinct, along with, of course, his constant drinking. When he strikes oil, he becomes an oil man and sets about cheating others out of their property in order to build his fortune. It is not even that he is greedy. He, in fact, turns down million-dollar offers for his property. Bear in mind how much more that would be worth around the turn of the century. He doesn't want to retire and be rich. What he wants is to work at beating everyone. He explains himself to his brother about halfway through the film, saying, "I have a competition in me. I want no one else to succeed. I hate most people." In many ways, Daniel Plainview represents the sinister side of American ideology, representing a terrible blending of the American dream's capitalism and the Wild West's fierce individualism and lawlessness. He competes throughout the film with the character of Eli Sunday, the teenage preacher who runs the church near Daniel's oil operation. The boy's religious fever is intense, but his ambition is no less than Daniel's. He claims himself a prophet and becomes obsessed with gaining funds and converts for his church. He despises and resists Daniel's capitalist oil enterprises, just as Daniel despises his church and his entire belief system. The two men strive constantly to outdo each other in their own way, and this striving ultimately destroys them both. In addition to this relationship, the relationship between Daniel and his son H.W. is played out through much of the film. It is used to show the extent of the man's ruthlessness and constantly contrasts his love of money with his love of his son. It is a magnificent film, which pulls off the mood and atmosphere of the American West flawlessly. Daniel Plainview, played by Daniel Day-Lewis, and Eli Sunday, played by Little Miss Sunshine's Paul Dano, are immensely strong and fascinating characters, and their clash is meaningful on multiple levels. Despite its length, the movie never lets go, the plot staying at a slow, brooding boil throughout. My first reaction to this film was jokingly, "Wow, a cautionary tale against alcoholism if I ever saw one." On second thought, though, I could explain that further. There Will Be Blood seems to serve as a brutal, vicious warning against the Wild West, the American dream, faith, capitalism, ambition, and ultimately, the self. One of the best films I've seen in a long time, and one that I very strongly recommend. Now, if you're interested in this film, especially if you've already seen it, I actually have a little tidbit of trivia that I found as well. In an interview in the National Public Radio program Fresh Air with Terry Gross, Paul Dano told Gross that he had originally been cast in the smaller role of Paul Sunday, Eli's brother, and another actor had been cast as Eli. However, after Dano had already started filming his one scene as Paul Sunday, Paul Thomas Anderson decided to replace the actor playing Eli. Anderson then asked Dano to play Eli Sunday, a much bigger role, as well as Paul Sunday, and they decided to change the film to make the brothers identical twins in order to explain this double playing by Paul Dano, I should say. Anderson asked Dano to play Eli on a Thursday, and filming for the role began 4 days later on the next Monday. Daniel Day-Lewis, by contrast, had a whole year to prepare to play Daniel Plainview. It's kind of an interesting contrast. I would say there that, Daniel Day-Lewis is obviously getting most of the attention for Best Actor, but Paul Dano was obviously also nominated for Supporting Actor. And both great performances. When you consider the fact that Paul Dano is very young, relatively so for someone carrying a lead role, and is also only had 4 days to prepare for his character of Eli Sunday, a really impressive performance on his part. Now, before we go, pass it on to Robert Waldman, who's going to be doing some more movie reviews for you today. I'm going to give you a few more listings, some other events that are going on around in the city. Another dance event is Lifelines. The Dance Center presents a new duet by dancer choreographers Gioconda Barbuto and Emily Molinar, created in collaboration with video artist and photographer Michael Sloboidian. That is at the Scotiabank Dance Center, February 8th to 9th. Also in dance, there's the Snowball Classic, international dance sport competition featuring more than 300 dancers from Germany, Italy, England, South Africa, Slovenia, Hungary, China, the Netherlands, the United States, and Canada. You can find more information at snowballclassic.com. That's February 8th to 10th at the Sheraton Vancouver Wall Center. In music, there's the Emerson String Quartet. American String Ensemble performs quartets by Brahms and Schubert. That is February 5th tonight at 8 p.m. at the Vancouver Playhouse at Hamilton and Dunsmuir. Also happening in music is the West Coast Symphony, a program featuring Shostakovich's Festival Overture and Symphony No. 1 and Tchaikovsky's Capriccio Italiano. That is February 8th at 8 p.m. at the Christchurch Cathedral. Finally, happening in literary events, there's a John Newlove documentary screening and book launch. They're going to be screening the new documentary What to Make of It All, The Life and Poetry of John Newlove, plus the Vancouver launch of Shawdair's book, A Long Continual Argument, The Selected Poems of John Newlove. So if you're a John Newlove fan, you want to go to that. It's February 8th at 8 p.m. at Western Front. And another literary event happening soon is Your Queer Book Club. Local writer James Irvine leads a book club open to lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. That's going to be every Wednesday from 7 to 9, starting February 13th. So if you'd like to join that club, you're going to want to keep your eyes out for that, starting on February 13th. Now, I know that I talked about getting a hold of Sabrina Jalise today. Unfortunately, we weren't able to, but I did get a hold of her a little earlier on, and I got the information for her show, in case you're interested. It's going to be herself and Deborah DiGiovanni, who are both from Much Music's Video on Trial, and they're both top 10 finalists from That Comic Standing. So if you're into those TV shows and you're into stand-up comedy, may want to be something you'll want to check out. It's called Smash the Roof. It's at the Norman Rothstein Theater, and you can find more information about it at gettickets.ca. Now, you're going to want to tune in to Arts Express next week. We're going to be talking to some students from the UBC Theater Department about their upcoming production, The Learned Ladies, and we're going to be talking a bit about the new Vancouver Art Gallery display, Paradise and Cuba. Now, stay tuned for Robert Waldman doing his movie reviews like he does every week. Signing out for Arts Express, I'm Katie Fitzpatrick.
I love to dance, Papa. Oh, can't we see the pretty horses?
Yes, on February 8th.
Oh, but do tell me where, Papa.
CITR's party celebration, being held at the Sub at UBC, 7 p.m. in the evening.
May we dress up?
Oh, but of course. You may dress up as your favorite dead trend. It's the theme.
Oh, will there be a small prize for the best costumes?
Yes, there will, little one.
19 plus.
Refreshments available.
Room 216. Are you clueless to what happens around campus? Do you hate the fact that most Canadian news outlets are owned by one company? Do conventional news leave you with a bad taste in your mouth? Well, don't be a hater. Be a joiner. News 101 is your source for alternative news from around UBC and the world. We're always looking for more newsies, so get in touch with us. Email us at news@citr.ca